Welcome to Hit for Six. It's Michael, it's a chilly Wednesday evening in the UK. What's the weather saying in Montreal today?
Well, I came to uni in jeans, a jumper, shoes, and I spent the day at uni in socks, shorts, and a t-shirt because I got so soaked on my walk in. So that's how Montreal is today.
Wet. And you finally fixed the Zoom issue with your laptop as well. That's good to
Yeah, I'm really sorry, guys, for holding us up. If we ever release an outtakes thing, we can have me and Rob bickering at the start of this before the official episode begins about whose fault it was. So that was fun.
I'm blaming you. And we're very fortunate for this. Well, it's a somber podcast. We will be talking about the death of English cricket. That's what Michael claims to me it is. I don't think it is. I do wonder if it is the end of an era with our wonderful white ball team of finally. That lovely journey since 2015 is maybe coming to an end. But join us on the autopsy report that we'll be doing today is our friend Dom Wood. Dom, how are you?
I'm very well. It's lovely to be here once again.
Great. Well, Michael, there's only one thing I want to talk about today. We can talk about Glenn Maxwell scoring the fastest ODI 100s in a World Cup. And today against the Netherlands ever, phenomenal innings. We can talk about Quinton de Kock scoring 100 in basically every game, apart from against England. And we still conceded 399 runs. And what a great World Cup he's having. We can talk about how Pakistan have been just as bad as we've been. But I think we just need to talk about England. Where did it all go wrong? The last podcast, I said we're going to beat South Africa in the cricket. We'll lose them in the rugby. We were much closer to beating them in the rugby than we were the cricket. We got thrashed. And yeah, Michael, you need to give me some sense on that because it was such a bleak, bleak day.
It was a bleak day. I actually quite enjoyed watching the rugby because I was watching with a lot of South Africans and they were getting increasingly upset and angry. And as you know, Rob, I don't really care about rugby. And so I just sort of sat there loudly clapping everything that went England's way with a big smile on my face, and they were getting increasingly angry all around me, and I just thought it would be so funny if we win this, because I could tell we were playing the ugliest form of, can you call it, rugby in the world, and if we won it playing that, it would have been hilarious. But unfortunately, the clearly better team did eventually win. But hey, I messaged you, didn't I, saying we need to do a podcast before we get knocked out, proclaiming this as the end of the era. I'm not saying it's the death of English cricket, but I think it is probably the end of that white ball era. And I think I said to you, Rob, the end to eras, they never come gently. They always come violently and you don't see it coming. And then suddenly, a la 2013-14 Ashes, they're literally running away from Mitchell Johnson off the pitch. Here, they're dragging themselves off the hot pitch. David Woodley literally dragging himself because he's cramping. It just feels like an old team that wasn't quite ready for this has just been found out. But
cricket's just brutal, isn't it? Like cricket doesn't do anything by halves. Like there's no slow death. There's no just sort of gently being eased out. Like cricket just completely destroys you if you screw up. And that's exactly what we're seeing at the moment, isn't it?
No second chances.
It does. I think, it's been a line that has been used a lot at the Rugby World Cup, is that sport can be cruel. So France and Ireland, probably the best two teams over the last 4 years, both lost narrowly in quarterfinals. Very harsh. It was pretty cruel. And that was the line. And I think in a different way, because it hasn't been narrow and we're so unlucky, but this does feel like potentially a cruel end for an England team that have been so good for so long. But I think that for me, maybe they'll turn it around. I don't know. But it does remind me of 2013-14 Ashes, because we won the Ashes.
Mm-hmm.
Home that previous summer, I was feeling good. I thought, Cook scored loads of runs last time, he'll score loads of runs this time. We've still got good bowlers, Broad, Anderson, Swan, KP. What a team. Trot, and before you know it, yeah.
KP debacle.
Actually had an all right series, but it's been ostracised. Graham Swan's retired halfway through the tour and it's all gone to pot. And with this team, it's not been as acrimonious off the field, but suddenly you're looking at, I thought Rashid actually bowled really well still, even though he had...
Rashid is a hero. I watched the highlights.
How ill was he?
The man, he looked so unwell. When he took one of those wickets, he just stood there looking like he was about to pass out and someone came in very gently high-fived him. Because anything more and he would have been knocked over. He is a hero, world-class performer. It did also make me think, okay, this really shows that leg spin is a much less... obviously it's a much less physical act, but the guy could barely stand up and he could still do his craft very well. Like a fast bowler can't do that.
But,
But very quickly, like, do you think that it's going to get more acrimonious? Do you think that there are going to be some fissures opening up where you see people going after Joss Butler because his captaincy doesn't look like it's up to scratch? Or is it are we in the new sort of kumbaya, happy clappy era of English cricket?
We've got a very obvious fall guy. It's not Joss Butler, he's untouchable, but Matthew Mott is going to get chopped. He's Australian. We weren't doing very well in any white ball cricket before we turned it around in that 2020 World Cup. Great, we won a World Cup, good. And as we discussed on that last thing, Rob, we weren't bad in that World Cup. We had moments of quality. It was more patchy. But I don't think he can really, after this showing, it just looks disconnected. And also, all of the sounds coming out of the camp are different. Like, everyone keeps saying different things day by day. Root's saying we're not playing enough cricket. Then Moeen Ali saying we haven't got the spark.
Stokes is saying there's too much cricket. It's all about the schedule. That's why it's all gone wrong. He did that. Why has it gone wrong? Oh, it starts with S, finishes with L, and it's got schedule in the middle was his kind of line.
It doesn't feel like a cohesive camp. It doesn't feel like an acrimonious camp, but it doesn't feel like they're all singing from the same hymn sheet. And I do think it could get quite ugly, not in terms of people turning on each other, but it could just get grim, couldn't it? We lose this next match, which I don't think we will. I think we will beat Sri Lanka, but we lose one more match and it's going to be awful. It's like another month. We're just getting pasted in the heat.
So I think it will end okay. I think we'll lose to India and Australia and we will beat Sri Lanka, Netherlands and Pakistan, who are abysmal as well. They really are not good. And so I think we will beat them. And then it will all end up okay. We'll finish sort of sixth or seventh out of 10. And it'll be
not okay.
No, it's not. But they will. I don't think there'll be any fallout. I think so many of the players get on well. I think you've got good characters in there. Stokes and Root. It's not. It doesn't got that whole like KP Strauss culture war vibe going. So I think it will all be fine on that front. It will all get pinned on Matthew Mott. He'll get binned off. There'll be a clear out of players who are maybe all people will retire who are a bit old. And then we'll rebuild with a new era of white ball cricket and we'll be fine.
Two things. I actually think we're more likely to beat Australia than Pakistan. I could just see Pakistan turning up and beating us. Whereas I still think Australia are a bang-av limited overs team. I really do. They're beating the teams you'd expect them to beat. Glenn Maxwell, that was insane. But he's like a 1-in-10 kind of guy.
1-in-30.
And it was insane. I literally woke up this morning, bleary-eyed, Montreal, 7:30 in the morning. See him on 40-odd with 4 overs to go. I then check the news a few hours later while I'm in class and he hit the world's fastest ton. I'm like, how has that happened? But I don't think they're that good. I think we can beat Australia. I just think we'll lose to India and we can't lose a game.
We'll definitely lose that game.
Also, how funny would it be if it all got blamed on Darren Millan?
It would be funny
somehow. Somehow.
Bless him.
Would be funny. And I don't want that to happen.
Talking in general terms, let's kind of dig into it a little bit more. Both the game, but more generally the World Cup so far. So the game itself, Butler, toss was wrong. I know the history books say that it's better than Chase at the Wankhede in Mumbai, but not that day, not when it's that hot, not when two of your players seem to be suffering from ill health at least.
That was wild.
That was kind of like a bad call. Against a team as well who have shown that they like to go out post to score and defend.
It was a terrible decision.
So that was definitely the wrong decision. And then it was an interesting game because it was well poised at 40 overs. There was something like 250 for 5. And he thought, you know what? If we get a couple of wickets now, they don't bat very deep. They only really bat for 7 or 8. Maybe we can get them to 290 and that feels quite chaseable. I parked up my car. I walked into home base. I walked out of home base. I got back in the car. I turned on the radio and I just hear Aggers go, oh, well, England are being dismembered here. That's not what I wanted to hear. And it was just that last 10 overs. You could say, of course, the previous 40 laid the foundation where they could bat like that. So not that the first 40 had gone well, but you feel, if you just imagine, a couple of wickets have fallen, suddenly they were 250 for 7, we can have them 285, 290, and then you go about your chase in a very different way. Bairstow's not trying to come out and hit everything for 6, and we end up in quite a different place. But that 10 overs, if the last 10 overs in the heat, we just got flogged, and the game turned.
Heroic by Klassen, I have to say. Like, the guy could barely stand up. He was in as bad a state as David Willey, sweating absolute buckets. Like, I respect it. It was amazing.
Yeah, and a brilliant knock. And also, Jansen. I don't know where that came from, but he was hit some great shots. I didn't really know he could bat that well. I just thought he was a really, really tall, really lanky left arm seamer.
So I think something we might have underestimated, and you described it earlier as cruel, the way, you know, Dom, you said cricket was cruel, and Rob, you were saying, you know, this could be quite a cruel end for this England team. We're saying it's cruel because we've really enjoyed the last few years. The rest of the world, how annoying must England's white ball revolution, the amount it's been talked about, the amount it's been hyped up, the amount the players clearly believe it, and fair enough, it's been brilliant. I think we underestimate quite how much of a target we might be to everyone else, like how much pleasure everyone else is going to take from us being dusted, like, and how much we're collapsing. Like when Marine came out today and said, if there's any team that can do this, it's us. I'm like, right, well, ratchet up the motivation by two more times for every team that's about to play us.
Yeah. I also think the fixtures haven't been that kind to us. I think now seeing Afghanistan beat Pakistan, they're clearly a half decent team. I think if we could have done after that New Zealand defeat a little bit more of a Sri Lanka and the Netherlands a little bit earlier on in the tournament, maybe.
No, you've got to beat Afghanistan. You just do. Like, yeah, they're half decent.
But I think the South Africa game came at the wrong time. So we had after the loss to New Zealand, we had Bangladesh, beat them fine. Then we had the Afghanistan game, which we should have won but didn't. And that then what you wanted next was Sri Lanka or Netherlands, not South Africa, who had just lost to the Netherlands and were hell-bent on correcting it. So that's more what I mean. I think it's been an unkind sequence of games. Obviously, we should beat Afghanistan. I'm not claiming otherwise. There's like a million reasons why we should be beating Afghanistan, not just the personnel, but the state of their country and their cricket. And like, they only have two lads who can bat. Those guys, well, maybe three. The top three can bat. No one else can bat, really, at like the World Cup level. And the two games they've won against proper teams, England and Pakistan, those top two or three have scored a load of runs. If you get those three out early, it's game over. And say, yeah, we shouldn't be losing to a team like that. But we bowled a bunch of half volleys and half trackers. And yeah, then couldn't chase 270 on a deck that wasn't that hard to bat on.
So should we get into the dissection of how it's gone wrong? Dom, what do you think?
I think it's like Captain Morgan was phenomenal. And I think you can't overstate how important he was for that team. The way that you can have a captain who's almost like a manager as well. And that, yeah, in his last couple of years, he wasn't a particularly good player. But he completely made up for that with what a great skipper he was. And I think you now have Josh Butler, who to me just seems slightly uninspiring. And then the other thing is just that we don't take domestic 50 over cricket seriously anymore. And so what do you expect? Like you call your 50 over competition where it is the young, it's literally the kids of every county that are participating in that. What do you expect is going to happen? Like, is this really a surprise? Are we surprised that we're suddenly like terrible at 50 over cricket? Now we're not prioritizing it, and instead we're using the hundreds and still trying to plow on with the T20 Blast. Like, I kind of agree with Stokes that it's the schedule. Like, there's now too much cricket, and we're not prioritizing the right things.
But also crucially on that last point, we haven't played much ODI cricket. Mm. We played this series against New Zealand and a few random games against Ireland, of which none of the people who played against Ireland are in the squad, basically. We haven't played...
Apart from Harry Brook, he didn't make any runs.
Exactly. Although he did against Afghanistan on the losing course, to be fair. I think we haven't... We prepared for the 2019 World Cup full on. Like, the ECB appointed Trevor Bayliss as our coach across all formats so that we would compete at that World Cup. They were happy for the test team not to thrive as much because they really wanted to go after that. And we did. And then since then, we kind of taken it for granted. And we've either... And the players have been good enough and we've turned up well at a couple of tournaments to get us through until 2022, but if you stop investing and playing those games and making that a priority, well, this is inevitably going to happen. And I think if you have to make priorities, I would rather our test team was flourishing under Brendan McCullum and our white ball team was a bit of a mess than the other way around, particularly after the success we've had. It did get to a point in 2015 where I was like, can we just actually be half decent at white ball cricket? Like, England should have won a World Cup by now. And it's nice that we've focused on that and did that. But now I would rather Test cricket was where the focus was, and it has been. What I don't understand is, why can't we have both?
Like, you can't have both.
I think you just can't.
You
Australia
can't.
Did for ages. They won the 1999, 2003, yeah, and 2007 World Cup.
But we can't. But we can't have both. I remember. I think we did a few podcasts ago talk about, wow, if we can win in India on the back of this amazing baseball summer, this is it. This is it. We'll be the best at both.
Yeah.
Now look.
Yeah, we can't do both. It's true.
But you would think that baseball would lend itself wonderfully well to being class ODIs and T20s. But and you look at the two teams. Like, there's now not that much difference in personnel.
Maybe this is like the cult-like aspect of baseball. They have to give a certain percentage of their soul to the cult, and it doesn't leave anything left for the white ball. They've drained husks. Like, Johnny Bairstow is not the same Johnny Bairstow out there. Ben Stokes is not the same. I'm just joking. But they are looking frazzled. Like, to get into the actual like playing side of it and to stop eulogising about how you can or can't have both, the way they got out, most of those dismissals were pretty limp. And actually, one thing we are really struggling is we've got arguably the best limited overs batsman in the world, and he's not making any runs. Like, Josh Butler isn't firing, and that's a big loss.
Definitely. And I think he captains with less confidence when he's not scoring runs, which I think is only natural. And I also think that one thing my dad's quite big on, he's been messaging me about this constantly during the World Cup, is that every player we played in the Ashes, with maybe the exception of David Warner — I know Smith and Labuschagne got runs today, but it sounds like I was getting runs today against the Netherlands. I mean, the Netherlands had a fantastic World Cup. They're much better than what we saw in Amsterdam a couple of years ago. But it did feel like today was just, they were on the wrong side of it, and they maybe didn't put their best foot forward. But most of the Australian guys who played in the Ashes, and our players who played in the Ashes, they do look knackered. That was an intense series, a lot of games close together, very, very high standard. And you got people who are so consistent and reliable, like Wokes and Stokes and Bairstow and Labuschagne and Smith, Hazelwood, Cummins, Stark. None of those players have had a good World Cup so far.
Root, they all look cooked. Brooke, yeah. I know Brooke made a few runs, but yeah, by and large, they all look cooked. It's kind to describe Bairstow as consistent.
I was just thinking of players who played in the Ashes. He's probably not consistent. Although, he's been a pretty good white ball performer.
He's been a wonderful white ball performer. I'm being mean. I'm just still frustrated at the Ashes, but it's fine.
But I then think you look at our players who have had a better tournament. Milan scored a fantastic 100 in Bangladesh. Topley, shame he's out of the World Cup now with his finger injury, but he bowled well. Rashid.
The way they got out really frustrated me. The way Root got out was so limp. The way Milan got out was limp. Bairstow at least were going for it. But they're talking this big game, but they don't seem like they're doing that. They're not committing in the same way they have for the last few years.
But to what extent is that the leadership that what Stokes brings to the Test side is like such clarity, and that they all know exactly what they're doing? It's exactly the same with Morgan, that he was such a galvanizing figure that was incredible, but also incredibly calm. Everyone knew it was going to be okay. Like, Morgan's at the helm, and now I think Butler is a phenomenal player, but as a captain, he doesn't strike me as a leader. Like, he seems very softly spoken, and I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's part of. I think that's definitely part of it. I don't disagree, but I also think I wonder if there's something in our national identity, certainly our cricket identity. I think of the amount of times I've played games of cricket where, let's say, normally we're in the field and they need 30 to win, 5 wickets in hand, 10 overs left. So they're obviously going to get it. And I'm just, and you know, you've got those two lads like, come on, lads, keep going here. Couple of wickets, this game's ours. And I'm just there like, can they just hurry up and score the runs? I'll have my token bit and I'll get in the car home. I hope not too many people from my cricket club are listening to this, but they'll know when my mind hits that point. I just mentally switch off. So do most of us. And so do most of the teams I play against when it's the other way around. I think that's what we do. And I've got a mate who's moved to Australia, and he seems to be like, he's always been a fight over every blade of grass himself. And that seems to be how they all play their club cricket. So I think our lads have gone, they saw that run chase. Once we were three down, I was going to say, I always have a swish, see what happens. And I think that's how we've all played cricket all the way through our lives. And then it's no wonder that maybe with a leader who doesn't inspire them to act differently, they all revert to type. And I kind of rate it.
Yeah, maybe. I think Dom's right. I think Butler's not a natural captain, but he leads by example, and he isn't loud, so he's not offsetting those natural British weaknesses like Rob's talked about. But he can do it by doing when he's playing at his best. Like, and him at his best is the best in the world. I will argue that till kingdom come. But he's not looking at his best, and maybe that's just affecting the rest of the team.
I really like him, so I don't want to stick the knife in on him. I'd rather blame Matthew Mott, the scapegoat, and send him out
send him back to Australia. Yeah.
To what extent as well, because I think the scheduling is a massive factor as well. To what extent is this still a hangover from COVID, where all of these nations are having to get back all this money that they lost because of the lack of the crowds, and that now they're having to pack the schedule because they're still having to get all this money back, and also the 100 still doesn't make any money.
But yes, and also so much of the focus has been on 2020 cricket. Yeah. So something we spoke about, Michael and I, on the last podcast was so many players seem unable to build an innings. South Africa seems to be really prepared for this World Cup and up for it, and they seem to know how they're going to...
They're the only team that's played fewer matches than us in the lead-up to this World Cup.
That is really interesting.
Isn't that crazy?
In like a completely different way. They seem to get it. But most teams, you see it time and again. You saw Imam do it against... who were they playing? They were chasing a big total.
Australia?
Yeah. Last week, you saw Linton Das do it against India. Like, they get to a 70 and let's get out. And it almost felt in a way that you got 25 overs left. Like, knock it around a bit more and then go big a bit later. That art of timing and innings and playing ODI cricket versus too many players seem to be in T20 modes as well, which I think links into it, which then brings up the bigger picture of or bigger question of, well, what is the future of 50 over cricket? This is the most prestigious World Cup, but is it actually long term what we're going to see?
Look, now we're bad at it. What's the point of it? Like, come on, now we're rubbish at it. Now we're rubbish at it. Get rid of it, obviously.
I like 50 over cricket.
I really
enjoy it.
Do like 50 over cricket. I was being silly.
I love it. I prefer it to 2020s.
Really? Okay, so the best bit about the short form cricket is the ending. Is that okay? You've got maybe five overs to go, and you've got a target, and that's the best bit. It's edging, but then with 50 overs, you've had to spend a whole day in order to get to that point.
Yeah, I just still think it carries enough of the ebbs and flows. It can, a game can flow a little bit. There can be some twists. A game can, and maybe
I play
cricket, so that's why I identify with. I don't know, but I like it. Like, I'm not like when I go, it's obviously a bit annoying on TV insofar as it's like all day, so you can't watch it in the way that you can a 2020. I can sit down and watch it for the evening, but when I go to an ODI, I went to an ODI, the England New Zealand one at Lords, and day night we lost, but it was great. I had such a great time. It's a proper game of cricket rather than a kind of a smash and grab, which I like. Yeah.
I also think we're not seeing the best of 50 over cricket at this World Cup because everyone's forgotten how to play it. So there's barely been a close finish. And yeah, you know, in defense of 50 over cricket, the most stressed, but also the best game I've ever seen was that World Cup final, that 2019 World Cup final. I couldn't get to sleep until like 3 a.m. because I was so buzzed from the match that had finished 8 hours previously. Like, I was just completely, I was completely a live wire. And you can only get that 50 over cricket from tension building over such a long period of time. You can get it from tests as well, but we're not touching tests, are we? So, like, for me, 50 over cricket it still should have a place. It's just, how can it have a place when it's not commercially viable anymore?
Yeah, but I wonder how It's still, I wonder if it's still sort of commercially viable. It's one of these, so it's really interesting being the two sports I know most about, like most, and probably follow closest to cricket and rugby. Rugby union has a genuine existential crisis around its commercial viability. Like that sport is sort of going bust and going bust quickly, certainly in this country, but more broadly, and is... The, like cricket, there's constantly this doom mongering. Test cricket's going to die. Like 50 over cricket is no longer commercially viable. But actually, cricket's in a really interestingly strong position in rude health. Like participation numbers have not dropped in cricket in the way it has with a number of other sports since COVID. They're still lower, but obviously football's different in this country, and you have to like let football sit separately. But cricket remains a popular sport for a certain a certain cohort of people. I was going to say a demographic, but it's different demographics. Mm-hmm. You have South Asian community. You have certain people in the UK who are white English who love playing cricket. Australian participation is really strong, but you've also got the youngest / biggest population in the world in India loving cricket. Cricket is going to be in the Olympics in LA for one reason and one reason only, and that is because the IOC have seen the untapped revenue potential that the second biggest country in the world, the biggest and fastest emerging economy in the world, doesn't really care about the Olympics because it's won like 3 gold medals ever in like the javelin and hockey once, because the sport they love is cricket and cricket's not in the Olympics. And so you feel like there's so much, there's actually so much going for cricket, and you see growth in a place like Afghanistan, and that's now like their sport. And I know it's obviously a country that's gone through a huge amount of turmoil and difficulty, and who knows where their future will end up, but that's a population of 35 million. You've got 130 million in Bangladesh, 1 billion people in India. It's still a hugely popular sport in Australia and England. What's happening in the West Indies is very sad. South African cricket seems to be on some kind of resurgence. I just think the sport's in a much healthier than we think it is.
Next World Cup in the US, we're going to tap into the massive expat communities there. They've got MLS cricket, is that what it's called, that's just started. No, I agree. It's not doom and gloom around cricket. And maybe to an extent, we've just been conditioned to think that 50 over cricket isn't viable because it's stopped being trending, because the games authorities have pushed the other way, have pushed towards 2020 leagues everywhere. Because that is more economically viable and it suits them more and it suits players more. But actually, 50 over cricket was viable a few years ago. It's still packed out when there's England ODI matches at home. And not that long ago, county 50 over games would get decent crowds. So, no, it's probably, or 40 over games, obviously varies. So, no, it's probably, it just depends on what the authorities want it to be, right? That's really it.
And I don't think anyone's going to go on a, no one's going to start protesting. If they like disbanded the Ashes or they stopped playing Test cricket, there would be a lot of very unhappy people.
Those would be the most polite protests that ever taken place.
Well, now you've seen those scenes in the long room. I don't know if that's quite true these days, but people would be very unhappy in England, in Australia, and a lot of players would be up in arms. They like playing Test cricket. So I do think ODIs, I'm kind of sympathetic to them. If ODIs don't exist for my children and grandchildren, I don't think they're missing out as long as Test cricket still exists and a longer form exists. So I do think in that regard, it may well die because I don't think anyone's going to fight for it that hard because there are other things more worth fighting for.
But we agree something has to change, right? Something has to be cut because the schedule is too packed. And so what's the easiest thing to cut? Well, it's ODIs, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, well, I for me, the solution, at the moment, how they try and resolve the solution, what's commercial, 2020s, and like, so let's have more bilateral series, get crowds in, whatever. If you're able to, you want to have something that every game has a bit more context, mm-hmm. trying to explain to a friend, oh, I'm going to go into the cricket. Oh, what's the tournament? Oh, yeah, we're just playing Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. In what? Oh, we're just playing it. It's a series. And what do you get if you win it? I don't know, a little trophy. But they're like, what? This is so weird. It's so alien to them. And I think if you then, the whole of the world cricket schedule, at least international cricket, drove towards something like they tried to do with the World Test Championship, but there was maybe either integrated between all of them, or then you basically want to make the different types of cricket and the cricket the most commercially valuable.
And meaningful, right?
Meaningful.
And they're doing it with rugby. They announced that this week, that they're essentially having a league for all international test matches, right?
Yes. Although the classic one with that is it's kind of half, because then you have a problem. You need to crowbar in a Lions tour in the Six Nations. You need to crowbar in the Ashes. And then yeah, you can't. Well, we want to have a world coherent World Test Championship with groups, and you play them. What about the Ashes? Okay, fine. Instead, we'll do a point system, and the Ashes kind of points counts towards the point system. And I think that's where it gets a little bit fiddly and tricky. I don't think cricket is, apart from maybe the Ashes, there's less stuff people have to hang their hat on.
I mean, at the moment, one day international series do count towards World Cup rank, towards qualifying for the World Cup. Is that right? Because the top eight in the rankings don't have to do the associate thing. Below the top eight, you've got to qualify by the associate route, which has seen West Indies was, not at this.
That tournament was amazing.
The way Netherlands beat, was it West Indies in the final? I'm pretty sure a couple of those.
They had to beat Scotland to qualify, I think.
Yes.
And they had to beat them by a certain amount, and then they did. That whole tournament was phenomenal.
And we're following it via Crick Info live text updates. That's
I was a full ICC stooge. I followed it on the ICC website. That was where I went for my content. But brilliant.
But I guess the point I'm trying to make is, how do you make that a bit more relevant? Because it's already got a relevance. Like, you've got to be in the top eight. But how do you, can you skew it, make it harder for the really established teams? Obviously, this is never going to happen. This is a complete pipe dream. But why don't we make the top three, India, England, Australia, or previous World Cup semi-finalists or something, have to basically do more to qualify, put more emphasis on the big powers so that they have to take ODI cricket and it all has a bit more of a stake, and you give the bilateral series a little bit more meaning.
But the thing is, what they've realised is that tournaments are the key thing. Like, tournaments are so exciting. An ODI tournament or a 2020 tournament is such good value. Like, a bilateral series is way less so. But then the danger is you then do too many tournaments and then it devalues it.
The Champions Trophy. We love it.
But you're having like T20 World Cups like every year. There was a four-year gap. They were every 2 years and they had a four-year gap, and they've had two in consecutive years, partly because of COVID. There's going to be another one next year. That's odd. It's like Arsene Wenger wanted football World Cups every 2 years. When they make, what makes them special is that they're every 4 years. Yeah. And so that's a tricky one. But I'm loving. I wouldn't watch Pakistan v Australia in a bilateral series, but I wasn't working on that particular day. I watched like the whole game. I loved it.
So we don't talk to talk about any of the matches, but I thought Pakistan were going to do it for a little bit. I did think they were going to do it. I was gutted.
So do you think this has been a good tournament so far? Just like that, I can't remember if it was Jonathan Liu or someone I saw on Twitter was like saying that how the Rugby World Cup has just been riveting. There's been so much drama, but then the Cricket World Cup just hasn't been well attended, and like the crowds are crap. And to be fair, that's partly because it's Indian, so that like it's not a thing where it's a day out and there's lots and lots of food and everything. Like you go to a match in India, there's not even hospitality. Like there aren't food trucks. Like it's so hot, people.
Stadiums are also massive, which doesn't help. Like the attendances, if you plonk them in another stadium, suddenly look right, but the grounds are also too big.
Yeah, there were enough people at England, New Zealand in the opening game to sell out Lords.
Oh, really?
It's empty because it's 130,000 seat stadium. It's bigger than any stadium in Europe.
This is part of the issue. But I agree, Dom.
Tickets only went on sale 6 weeks before. Yeah. Then that's the schedule. The tournament's been one of the reasons why the World Cup's felt a bit flat is because it's been badly organised.
Yeah.
So that's got nothing to do with the format, or that's on the organisers, on whoever. This World Cup feels like it's being staged so that this generation of, I know Kohli's won one before, but like Jadeja, Kohli, Sharma, Bumrah, KL Rahul, like, and co can win a World Cup. Like that, it feels like we're having like an exhibition tournament so that they can win it at the end, because they probably should have won an ICC tournament over the last 5 or 6 years. They haven't. So just win your own one and then we can move on. That's how it feels like in terms of how it's organized.
It feels boring. It doesn't feel like a good tournament. However, I have to question my own bias here, because England are doing badly, so obviously I'm not enjoying this tournament as much. India are doing well, so obviously I'm not enjoying this tournament as much. Like, there's reasons for why I'm not enjoying it, but there are also other reasons that aren't to do with that, to do with the lack of close finishes towards the mostly lower scores other than South Africa. So it doesn't feel like a good tournament. I'm also struggling because all the games start at like bloody 3 a.m. for me or something, so like I'm really struggling to watch any of it. No, it doesn't feel like a good tournament.
I still think the quality of cricket on the whole has been pretty good. I've really enjoyed it. I followed every game. I could tell you every, if you asked me to sit down in the room and tell you every team that played each other so far and what the result was would be, I probably could. I've watched at least 5 minute highlights of every game apart from today's because I've been at work. So I still, but I'm also going to be, they can put on a Cricket World Cup on Mars and like blokes from the Dog and Duck can play and I'd probably watch it. So I am a certain audience. But it's, I also think then you go back to why the Rugby World Cup's been exciting. That's Rugby World Cup's been on ITV. It's been highly, highly publicised. There's also that advantage that rugby has in particular, where you have this for the home for us as a, for the BBC basically. There's interest in England, Scotland, Ireland, and Wales, which is so we just have England. So if England aren't doing well. Well, then there's not much going on, so they can get a big hype, particularly. For example, if we're talking BBC Sport, which is how a lot of people consume their sport online. And like, there's a lot of investment in BBC Sport Wales into the rugby team because that's their main sport. And so when Wales play, that's like a massive deal for BBC Sport, as it should be, and also for England. So you therefore have two, and then Scotland have been really good. And then Ireland are the best team in the world. And part of that's Northern Ireland, which is the UK. So they're driving those narratives. And it's on ITV. And it's in France, so it's on evenings. Mm-hmm. And there are games every day because they have to wait. There's the gap in between the weeks. Yeah. It's just on weekends. And some of the key games fell during international break for the Premier League. So it has had a lot of those ideal factors. It's happening in India, locked away on Sky Sports, one game a day.
One game a day sucks. One game a day absolutely sucks. Why? You can do two. It's so annoying and it makes tournaments so much longer than it needs to be.
Can you do two? Like, it's one day. Like, it's a whole day.
It was two a day in 2019. I'm pretty sure. Was it two a day in 2019?
Well, it certainly felt like it. This World Cup feels like it's long.
I'm pretty sure it was two a day. A quick Google can prove me right or wrong.
You can also do, like, 2-2, 1-2, 1. You know, you can have it mixed. Like, the only game on the bill today didn't have to be Netherlands-Australia. They could have offered. Yeah. Like, you might only have, okay, we're going to only have one on the Friday. We'll make it India-Pakistan. Fine. But then... Let's have Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, and Afghanistan, New Zealand on the same day.
So at the end of the day, like you're going to have people that want to watch both. But you're also going to have loads of people who just want to watch one or jump back and forth between the two. And if you have them staggered, so one starting in the morning, one starting at two, one's a night, day, night, one's a day, it's absolutely doable. So yeah, that sucks. Just because we've got into a big discussion about the viability of 50 over cricket and the long-term future of it. We didn't actually talk about the England bowling, other than Dilshree being a hero. We didn't talk about how badly everything else has gone. Rhys Topley looks all right, and now he's gone. Mark Wood.
Also, well, Gus Atkinson bowled quite well, to be fair. So I hope we play him in the rest of the games, because I thought he fronted up nicely. Everyone else just love bowling a full toss.
Poor David. David Willey was... Because I've only watched highlights, so I don't know as well as you do. David Willey, was he? His figures were okay until he got cramp, is that right? Or
well, all the figures were okay until the last 10 overs and everyone got spanked. I mean, David Willey had cramp and also looked a little bit unwell. Like, Adil Rashid was visibly unwell. I felt like Willey might have been as well. So I'm happy to give him a pass on that game because he wasn't at his best. I thought Topley did well, but then he did his finger and then after he'd done his finger, he just bowled pies. Atkinson did well. Wood was terrible. They batted well. We shouldn't have. We got the toss wrong and it kind of all unraveled from there.
Toss wrong, team selection wrong.
Yeah, but then Wood and Wokes both bowling poorly, Topley injured. Yeah, well, the door's open for Atkinson to bowl well and do well, and I wish him best. But
riding cast, flying out to a place, but won't be there in time for the next game. Joffre Archer has gone home with no reason given for why he's gone home, but that's a bit worrying, isn't it? Like, what's the odds that there's been a flare-up in that elbow? Are we ever going to see him play again? It's really sad. It's really, really sad. And Joe Root and that
I was hoping he'd do a culpable. I was hoping he'd do a... Basically, what happened with Johnny Wilkinson? Wait, Johnny Wilkinson didn't play for England again after 2003 until 2007 because he was always injured. Then he played a bit in the 2007 Six Nations, then came back to the World Cup and was class and helped us make the final. That was how I had envisioned it. We're not going to see Joffre for 4 years and he's going to come back, Ashes World Cup. He's going to disappear for 4 years, Ashes World Cup. Just make sure he's ready for the legacy games. But sadly not.
To what extent has this just been a spinners World Cup as well? Like, I admit I haven't been watching it that closely, but...
No, I
it's a mix.
It's been a mix. I don't think too badly. I think quite a few seamers have had good tournaments. It's definitely a place. If you're a seamer and you're not bowling well, you're gonna get a distance. I mean, like De Beek or whatever his name is, the Netherlands today got some fair tap. Harris Ralph, he got sent.
Harris Ralph's had a terrible tournament.
Terrible tournament. So I do think it's particularly unforgiving if you're a seamer. But like, you know, Bumrah's had a good World Cup, and some of the Kiwi boys, Matt Henry's bowled pretty well.
Did you rate Santner as a bowler?
Santner is underrated. Santner has been good for years. Yeah, Santner is a hero. I'm actually going to stand up for him. He's also one of the bespectacled sportsmen that I will stand by no matter what. But his numbers stand up over his whole career. He's an actually underrated goat.
Pound shot for Tory.
I'd love to be a pound shot, Dan Vittori. So we'd all absolutely love to be.
That's actually a very kind thing to say.
Yeah. I mean, he just looks like a startled fawn. It's my thing with Santner. He just doesn't look like a professional sportsman. But yeah, no, it feels like the wheels have fully come off. But hey, I'm going to call it. I'm going to be pessimistic and say it's gone. No chance. It's going to be a really grim few weeks. But Rob, you're going to say we're going to make it, right?
We're not going to make it. I think today's game, actually, Australia-Netherlands has turned against the net run rate now. There's a big gap. Have to score 500 and bowl out a few teams for 50 to close that gap again. So I think we will not qualify. That's okay. I think we'll have an okay end. I think it will be, we'll win three or four of our 10 games or 9 games, which is not great, but at least it will be a couple of the games left. We'll win about as many as we lose and we'll sort of peter through. And I think we're destined to for an India now, sadly, India and then the Ruddy Tri-Nations, South Africa, Australia and New Zealand as our top four. Maybe Afghanistan can spring a surprise. And then
I never cheer for South Africa, but if they're against India in that final.
100%. Yeah, exactly. I think I'd only support India against Australia because I can't have Australia winning 6 Cricket World Cups. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. I'll paint my face blue, orange and green if it's versus Australia.
But it's basically, they are, if it is, I don't really like South Africa. So it'd be all in on New Zealand if that is the top four. And then if it has to be, then South Africa and then India and then Australia. But I am hoping, and it would be really funny, and it would also be really, really funny if Australia did it, if they do beat India. Like, imagine a final, pack final. They're all absolutely buzzing for it. And that Narendra Modi Stadium, man of all people, awful Prime Minister. And they're all absolutely gassed. Here it is. And then Josh Hazlewood takes 3 for 10. It is 10 overs. And they're just this, like, games blown wide open. And Labuschagne and Warner just take ones as they win a really disappointing final. I hope that doesn't happen because I don't want Australia to win a Cricket World Cup again, but that would be so funny.
It would be funny. And that's what, at the end of the day, that's what we're interested in cricket. What's funny? And that would be funny.
Well, Michael, enjoy whatever seminar or lecture you're 3 minutes late for. It's been good to catch up and see you soon.
Cheers, boys.